Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I'm going to play football.
I'm coming down from the gallows and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another edition of The Standard is the Standard, obviously. And as always, I'm joined by co-host Lance Williams. Lance, how are you doing this evening?
Were you trying to crack a joke right there, Jeff?
Obviously.
Ha ha! Cha-ching!
You doing good over there on the West Coast? Everything good out in Cali?
Yes, it is. Sort of an Indian summer. I'm roasting with no air condition, but other than that, everything's well.
All right, perfect. We have a lot to talk about. I'm Jeff Hartman, as I forgot to mention. And as always, if you want to call in at any time during the show, you can. And then here's the phone number, 347-850-8581. Again, it's 347-850-8581. Call at any time. We'll get you on the air. We have a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to recap the last victory, the last game against the San Francisco 49ers here in Pittsburgh. We're going to preview the upcoming game against the St. Louis Rams, and we're going to talk about some other stuff that happened involving the Pittsburgh Steelers today with Le'Veon Bell returning to the lineup. Moves had to be made. We're going to talk about those and talk about some impending moves and some other news going on with the team. So let's get right to the recap. Real quick, what would you say, if you were to give game balls away after the 49ers game, and there's going to be obvious ones for crying out loud, Ben Roethlisberger was the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. If you haven't didn't see that, he would obviously get a game ball. Who would be someone that would get a game ball for you, offense or defense, that might not be the most glaring, obvious choice?
On the defensive side of football, I'll give two game balls. I think you'd have to give them the Hayward and Tuitt. They sort of set the tone of how the defense was going to play early in the game by really getting after Colin Kaepernick. And on the offensive side of football, I would have to give a game ball to just that offensive line. They really kept Ben clean. And without the offensive line playing as well as it did, particularly in pass protection, that Ben Roethlisberger doesn't win the AFC Player of the Week. And also kudos to Todd Haley for really coming in with the smart strategy and letting Ben take the reins and them going really up tempo and trying to gas a team that was operating on a short week with cross-country travel. So those would be my other unsung heroes in the ball game.
You took mine. I was going to say Haley because Todd Haley gets a lot of hate thrown at him. He did, obviously, in week one when Antonio Brown, they dialed up the – wide receiver screen pass play, which obviously was ineffective. I thought they had a great game plan. And he made some changes that, and maybe it wasn't all him. It could have been the team, didn't like the looks, all that good stuff that they do within the week that we're not privy to. I liked how they did things like they abandoned the jumbo package on the goal line. And that's something a lot of people might not have really noticed, but they didn't bring in that extra tackle. They actually spread him out more. And it worked. And D'Angelo Williams scored 3 rushing touchdowns, first time since 2008 when Willie Parker did it, for a Pittsburgh Steeler running back to rush for 3 touchdowns in a game. That's a pretty amazing statistic there. But on the defensive side of the ball, I would probably have to say Mike Mitchell and Will Allen, I thought, played a great game. Mike Mitchell especially is one that he just gets ripped on constantly. He hasn't played up to what people expect of him, but nonetheless, he's a guy that he made some plays. He had a couple pass defense. He made some big tackles, was laying the lumber. And I thought Will Allen, and I've been his biggest critic in this aspect, I've never thought he's been good in run support. You watch the film, he did a very good job in run support against the San Francisco 49ers. I thought he did a great job. So that's who I would give my game ball to. Now, you wanted to talk about some statistics. Andrew Kipp, I believe he wrote the article for BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, he looked up some statistics that you wanted to talk about. Go ahead, and now's your chance to do that.
One of the stats that was listed, and this is an incredible stat, and we were talking about this stat a little bit off air, and before I jump into it, I want to echo your thoughts on Mike Mitchell. Big hit on Carlos Hyde early in the game that really limited Hyde's effectiveness throughout the game, which, of course, impacted the game severely. And that was probably one of the biggest plays in the game from a defensive perspective. But one of the stats that were listed here that's absolutely ridiculous is that the Steelers had the ball for 23 minutes and 1 second. In that time, they scored 43 points for an average of 1.87 points per minute. That is comical. I mean, that in terms of efficiency, that's almost 2 points a minute. You put that out over 60 minutes, you do the math, listeners. That's how much, or let's just say, you know, of course you can't do 60 minutes, you know, but let's just say you possess the ball 30 minutes. Yeah, average possession. Just do the math. Throw any type of minutes in there. If you just want to have fun with math, do that and multiply it, and that's the point you get. That's absolutely ridiculous. Another ridiculous stat from that game, or just not from that game, but overall from this season. We often talk about on this show yards per attempt and how important that is. Ben Roethlisberger is averaging 11.1 yards per attempt. Let me read this straight from the article. That means that every time Ben drops back to pass, he is averaging more than first down distance. You couple that with the fact that he's only been sacked twice, and he has completed more than 72% of his throws and already has 10 completions of 20 yards or more, all tops in the National Football League. If you don't believe that Ben Roethlisberger is now firmly entrenched as one of the three best quarterbacks in the league, along with Brady and Aaron Rodgers, you're living on Mars. He is playing outstanding football. And last but not least, I wanted to point out some of the bananas stats of Antonio Brown. So in the game, Antonio Brown, 9 catches, 195 yards, good for 21.7 yards per completion. And he was targeted 22 times in the game. Excuse me, 11 times in the game. He's been targeted overall 22 times on the year and has 18 receptions, which is just sick. Consider this. The number is so ridiculous because he gets double coverage. And if you were to expand his numbers out for an entire season, he's on pace for 144 catches for 2,624 yards, which would best Marvin Harrison's 143 catches and Calvin Johnson's 1,964 yards. Also, this was Antonio's 35th consecutive game with at least 5 catches and 50 yards, and 12 straight with at least 7 catches. Both are NFL records. That's just flat out getting it done. This offense is humming right now.
People talk about video game stats. Man, that's Madden stuff that you're talking about. People mentioned that last year when Roethlisberger threw for 6 touchdowns in consecutive games against the Colts and the Ravens. This is Madden stuff that you're talking about. This is video game stuff. I mean, listen to those numbers. I mean, if you're listening live or whether you're listening in podcast form, it doesn't matter. It's astonishing. Both Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown, I said this in an article, their connection is almost on a different world right now. I mean, you know that they're on the same page every single time the ball is snapped. Roethlisberger knows exactly where Brown's going to be. He knows what he's thinking. There's only been a handful of times that there's been a little miscommunication. A couple of those passes, Antonio Brown going across the middle, whether he was trying to sit down on the soft spot or Ben led him a little too much, it's rare. Very, very rare. Now, one thing I want to say, Lance, about Antonio Brown is that it's not so much if you watch the plays that they're making. In the past, those a lot of those receptions have been those quick hit bubble screens, and there's been a couple of those sprinkled in, but not as much as normal. He's getting himself down the field, and Roethlisberger, you mentioned all the stats with him. I mean, talk about a guy that's just throwing it into a basket, literally. And down the field, that intermediate deep route, that sideline route that he hit Marcus Wheaton with in the week one game against New England where he had a great catch. He had Antonio Brown with the same route in the first quarter. It was the first down, I think, on the opening drive where he got hit in the head and wasn't called. He's on point. And you kind of are waiting for Roethlisberger to kind of have a game where it's back down to earth. But maybe this is the expectation. It happens with all the great ones. People don't wait for Aaron Rodgers to F up. People don't wait for Tom Brady to have a bad game. And same with Peyton Manning a few years ago before his arm fell off. Maybe this is what – do you think this is what we should expect for the entire season with this crew?
We talk about it all the time when we exchange texts or when we're talking off air. If they pass protect, he's going to put up banana numbers, period. That's my expectation every week. You give him a pocket, something to operate, some fairly clean pockets, some decent protection, it's going to be banana numbers. You know, that's just how he's playing now. His game has evolved. He's the cerebral quarterback that still has arm strength in his 30s and still has the ability, when necessary, to extend plays and make plays. Attend to the play in Sunday's game where he rolls right and throws it, drops it in the basket from like 50 yards away, ba-bang. The guy's just playing outstanding football. He's playing MVP caliber football week in and week out. But on the banana stats, let me not leave the defense out. Let me be fair and equitable here. Let me read this. Speaking of the Steelers front seven, they sacked Colin Kaepernick 5 times, giving them 6 sacks for the year, 1 sack to Will Allen, so that's 7 sacks total. The 6 sacks currently has them tied with the Cleveland Browns for 4th in the NFL. The front seven is on pace for 48 sacks in 2015, and the entire defense is on pace for 56. In 2014, the Steelers managed just 33 sacks. Since the league started officially tracking sacks, in 1982, the Steelers have never had 56 sacks in the season. Their best was 55 in 94 and in 2002. And if they continue to get pressure like they have been, they're going to compete for the 7th ring if they stay healthy.
All right, well, pump the brakes a little bit because you got me all jacked up and ready to go run through a wall talking about these sacks and stuff. We've got some callers that want to talk about some of the stuff that we're talking about right now. As always, the man with the plan, Vito from New Jersey. Vito, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Vito.
It's like a rocket ship when number 7 is on that field, huh?
It seems like it.
I was just thinking about something the other night. What happens if everything else failed? You had a terrible offensive line in 2004. You have not the best of receivers, but you have a guy like him that could always extend plays. I think he's got 100 passer rating or better when the play breaks down. That's number one, and I think he's one of the best at that. Number two, I didn't realize how deep he could throw the ball. I never thought he was a deep passer. I mean, I've seen him do it in the playoff games when they went to the Super Bowl, but I didn't realize, you know, at 25 years old versus 33 years old, he could still command that type of, you know, accuracy and that type of speed and strength in the arm. And I think last year they said he was healthier than he was for a very long time because he was just throwing the ball around like it was nothing. And then that article on being indispensable. I mean, guys, think about it. What would they do without him? Where would you? I mean, no matter how great your talent is around, what would they do without Ben? And another positive I want to not forget is that Mike Munchak has done a phenomenal job with the offensive line. I mean, he's made these guys so much better. Let's give credit where credit is due. Mike Munchak and Todd Haley, between both of those guys on the sidelines, just look at how much better everything has happened for these guys. What's your take?
Yeah, absolutely. Lance, I'll jump in here first and talk about Roethlisberger. Here's a guy that was criticized early on in his career for not taking care of himself, for being very careless off the field, and we know that from the motorcycle accident and all the other transgressions that have happened with him off the field. And it wasn't until about 4 or 5 years ago he started finally taking care of his body, and that's when he found the arm strength to really hone his skills, and that's what you're seeing now. It's kind of like the fruits of his labor are finally coming to fruition in terms of he's always had a big arm. He's always been able to throw it deep. And for Roethlisberger, his issue is always those intermediate routes that I just referred to. I don't understand really where they would be without him because they would be nowhere, plain and simple. Without Roethlisberger, you can talk about Le'Veon Bell. You can talk about Martavis Bryant. You can talk about Marquise Tennessee. They're winning without those guys. And they put up 43 points without those guys. And the reason why is because of Ben Roethlisberger. You have Michael Vick now as a backup. You've had other backups in the past. So yeah, they've won a couple games, but you're not going to win a Super Bowl without number seven. There's no way that that's going to happen. Now, I will say this about Mike Munchak. I thought it was the best acquisition the team has made probably in the last 5 years, and that's including those players that they've picked up, whether it's in the draft, whether it's free agency, whether it's via trade. Mike Munchak brings Hall of Fame credentials and unbelievable coaching experience to the table. And it's unbelievable how, like you said, the difference he's made in that unit. Now, with all that considered, there's a great article written by Chris Carter for BehindTheSteelCurtain.com recently about Kevin Colbert's drafting philosophy and how they've decided to focus on the trenches, the offensive and defensive lines. And Mike Munchak has some high potential players in that group that he's working with. Pouncey's a first round pick, Gilbert's a second round pick, David DeCastro is a first round pick. Now on the other side, yeah, you have Beecham, who's a seventh round pick, and Foster, who was undrafted. But those guys have been together, and there's a good chance they won't be together next year, so we better enjoy it. Now, Lance, what do you think about all this?
I echo your sentiments, particularly when it comes to Ben Roethlisberger and his health. Not only has he matured, but he's in a system that's more friendly to quarterback health. The ball's getting out quicker. He's letting his playmakers make plays and getting them the football so they could do their thing. He's not sitting back taking 5 and 7 step drops. Although the yards per attempt is a ridiculous 11.1, it doesn't feel like a Bruce Arians offense where there's a bit of a sacrifice of protection for trying to get big plays. So a lot of times when people criticize the move of bringing Haley in and how the offense looks sort of different, you could see now that a lot of that was catered to trying to keep the quarterback healthy. And Ben Roethlisberger is one of those athletes that if he's healthy, he's going to play well. As long as he gets to stay healthy and get on the field, he's going to mature, he's going to get better. This is an elite guy. When elite guys stay healthy, they do elite things. And speaking of just how elite he is, and we talked about the top three quarterbacks in the league, you know, according to Pro Football Focus, that's how it measures itself out. Ben Roethlisberger, after 2 weeks, is number one. Aaron Rodgers is number two. And Tom Brady is number three. And that's where it is. I'm not saying Ben is the best. I think you could argue the three. I would respect anybody's argument. But he's in that rarefied air. He's a top three player. And if he remains healthy, he'll continue to do top three things.
All right. Well, Vito, we have another caller. So thank you for the phone call. Some really good inquiries there about the team and Haley and some of those lesser-known individuals who make a big difference. We have another caller here. We have Fitz in Iowa wants to talk about Roethlisberger and some of the passes that he made this Sunday in Heinz Field. Go ahead, Fitz. You there?
Yeah, I'm here, guys. Baldwin Highlander forever. Glad to hear from you guys again. It's good to hear you. Two things about two passes that Ben made makes him even more incredible, plus his receivers. The pass to Antonio Brown, where he juked the three guys, that pass was a very long pass, and Ben arced it. And it's amazing, even though he's that good, Antonio Brown outran the pass and had to slow down to catch it, which is amazing to add that to the mix. And the pass to Darius Haywood-Bey for the touchdown, it wasn't an arc pass. It was a straight shot. That thing flew incredibly fast. Any receiver outside of Pittsburgh who would have tried to catch that ball would have been ripped right through his fingers. We have some awesome people as a team going together with that. It was an incredible set of receptions to watch on Sunday. So I just wanted to share that with you, that it steps up even higher. As you guys were talking about Ben and the receivers, it makes it even better of what we have there in that group. And I always love listening to y'all. Hey,
thanks a lot.
You bet.
Lance, you want to go first?
I'm going to give you an even more ridiculous throw. Was the dash pass throw where he sprints to his left, repositions his body, floats it over the top, drops it in the bucket to Darius Haywood-Bey beating Eric Reed on a post route. Great throw. Great throw.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he's just dropping it. Dropping it in the bucket. He's throwing dimes. He's in complete command, and he looks comfortable. He's a maestro out there, just orchestrating the offense at this point.
Well, when you have an offensive line that you literally do not get touched. I mean, it wasn't that he wasn't sacked. They didn't even get a hit on him. I think they might have had one, which was nullified by a penalty. That was it. He's had clean pockets the last two games, and the two sacks that he suffered against New England were definitely not the offensive line's fault. They were ones where protection was a protection sack, so to speak. Or not protection, it was a covered sack. Nonetheless, I think Ben Roethlisberger, what people need to remember about him is that he needs to start getting some credit for the fact that he has some great wide receivers, and Antonio Brown, and some of the adjustments these guys are making to passes and some of the catches they're making. Think back to Wheaton's catch in week one where, I mean, that pass looked like it was sailing out of bounds or it was going to be intercepted, and he somehow brings it down and gets his feet in bounds. Just remarkable athletic plays. Good throws, better catch is what I always say in some instances. But I think you have to look at this and say Ben Roethlisberger is becoming one of those quarterbacks that it doesn't matter who's out there. You know, you think back to look at Tom Brady. I mean, outside of Randy Moss, who's been a Hall of Fame wide receiver that he has had on his team? Nobody. Deion Branch, Brown, or Tim Brown, Dante Stallworth, Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, no. I mean, the answer is none. Now, Peyton Manning's a little bit different story. Aaron Rodgers, they make people better. It doesn't matter who they are. And Roethlisberger is getting to that point in his career when he's throwing these passes, and Darius Haywood-Bey, who's been known as one of the worst pass-catching receivers in the NFL, is making big plays for him. And that's kudos to Darius Haywood-Bey, but it's also kudos to Ben Roethlisberger. But to piggyback one more thing that you said, this is how great the team is. Just think how great it's going to be this week when Le'Veon Bell returns and in 2 weeks when Martavis Bryant gets back. Because the players that are already making plays are not going to stop all of a sudden. What's going to happen is you're going to have more playmakers in the system. And that is truly frightening, or should be truly frightening, for opposing defensive coordinators when they're trying to game plan on how to stop the dual running game of D'Angelo Williams and Le'Veon Bell and all the offensive weapons that the Steelers have in the aerial attack. I can say as a Steeler fan, I'm extremely excited for that to happen. So, Fish, appreciate the phone call. Do you have anything else before we let you go?
No, we're good, guys. Hang in there and keep doing the good job you're doing for us, all right?
Hey, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for the phone call again. All right, I think we have another caller here. We'll wait and see to get this guy on the air in a couple seconds here. Ben Roethlisberger deserves credit. I think that's the ultimate thing here, is that Roethlisberger is, I wouldn't say he's like Joe Flacco. That's a constant. For me, that's like the watermark. Everyone always is like, is Flacco elite or is he not? I think Roethlisberger's always been in that elite category, but he's never been with the Bradys, the Rodgers, the Mannings, and now all of a sudden somehow Andrew Luck is being tossed even in front of Roethlisberger. He's cementing himself right up there with those guys, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, you mean Andrew Luck or Big Ben? You mean
No, I'm talking about Big Ben. But Big Ben, Andrew Luck hasn't looked very good this year. But, I mean, there are people that are saying that Andrew Luck's a better quarterback than Roethlisberger leading into the season. When, I mean, Roethlisberger's been to 3 Super Bowls, won 2. He's put up great numbers, especially in 2014. I mean, I just don't think he always gets the credit that he deserves.
Yeah, they're crazy. I mean, I don't even have to go back to the suit. I don't even have to go to his resume. I could just look at the last 2 years or the last 3 seasons. He's played better football than Andrew Luck. There's no question. I mean, that's – and I don't want to appear as if, I'm the homer guy just pom-pomming and cheering for Ben, but he's played better football than Andrew Luck, particularly when it comes to turnovers. Andrew Luck turns the football over in big spots, and he turns it over a lot. So if we're talking about rarefied air and trying to find the little differences between elite guys, look at turnovers. Quarterbacks can't turn over the football. That'll get you beat. You know, what does Andrew Luck do against the Jets? He looks terrible. He turns the football over, I believe, 4 times. Three picks and another fumble. So you can't do that. And elite guys don't make those type of mistakes. Sure, they can, but they typically don't. Andrew Luck has a lot of time to become the NFL's best, and at some time I think he will. But as long as Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Ben Roethlisberger is playing, he's at 4, if you even want to put him at 4. Particularly with Peyton Manning now out of the mix. And I think Drew Brees is out of the mix as well. I don't even know if Andrew Luck is better than Phillip Rivers. And that's no knock to Andrew Luck. Phillip Rivers is a very good quarterback. So, it can all be debated. It's why we do podcasts. It's why people call in. These are fun questions and fun conversations. But Big Ben is in the top 3. That's not even a question.
Well, let me say this, that for anyone listening that might be new to the show, if there's one person that I know that's not a homer, it's you, Lance. You're not a homer. You're the one that always seemingly picks against the Steelers in these big games, and I'm always the one. Hey, CC and I, Chris and I are the ones that are always homering it up, saying, no, the Steelers are going to win. And you're the one that's like, nah, they don't have this one. They're going to lose. He's not a homer, folks. But what he's saying is true. We have another caller here. Let's get him on the air. We have an individual. I hope this is not his given name, Steel Mohawk. go ahead. You're off with Jeff and Lance.
Hey, Lance. It probably is my given name by now since I've been part of Lance's shows for so long. But I'd like to talk about Shazier and his breakout game and, of course, the injury at the end of the game. Like, it seems like as many steps as he takes forward, he's always that one injury away from, becoming a bust. We saw so much speed and, a nose for a football and what we want from our, inside linebacker. But, at that end, the stinger, how much should we worry about his overall health compared to what he brings to the field?
You want to take that, Jeff?
No, go ahead. You're the defensive guy. Go ahead.
I think you should be very concerned. Until we see him do it on a consistent basis, you should be concerned. Given the size that he plays with, I'm not sure of the weight. When I look at him, he looks like a big safety to me, but at times he looks like a small inside linebacker. So I'm putting him around 245 pounds, I'm guessing. If that's the case, that's light inside. The promising sign or the encouraging sign that we're seeing this year is that he's getting some nicks, but he's still practicing and he's still playing. But until he can get through 14 games, back-to-back seasons and so on and so forth, it should always be a concern because he's a Lamborghini. He's definitely a Lamborghini, Maserati, Ferrari on the inside. We're waiting to see if he's Ford tough. So I think the jury is still out.
Because I have like a Hayward jersey, but I'm waiting to buy another defensive player, and like we were just waiting for all these rookies to like show up, and they each have their issues. But man, it's like I really want to like Shazier, but I'm really expecting him to just be on the sideline for the rest of the season any day now.
Well, just like what you get when you get it. And if you want to buy a jersey, buy a Joe Green. Buy a Joe Green or a Troy Polamalu. They'll never disappoint you.
Let me say, Lance, you shouldn't go to a carnival and try to pick people's weight by your looks. He's listed on Steelers.com as weighing 230 pounds. And, I think that's more real. He's 6'1", 230 pounds. Look, I don't think that a couple fluke injuries he had last year, and they were fluke injuries, I don't think we have to start thinking this guy's the next Kendrell Bell in terms of one specific injury is going to be keeping him out of the lineup and eventually off the team. The shoulder injury, from all things that we've heard coming out of their camp, is that they're just precautionarily keeping him out of practice. There's no need for him to, go out there and re-injure from what I understood, as a stinger. Wait till Thursday and Friday, tomorrow and Friday, those injury reports before you start wondering if he's going to play or not. I fully expect Shazier to play. And I was more concerned about the knee injury last week leading up to the 49ers game. He was a limited participant on Friday and was still listed as probable played. And we all saw it didn't look like he had a knee injury on Sunday. I want to see more of these guys. You talk about the young defenders, Jarvis Jones, Ryan Shazier, all these young guys, Stephon Tuitt. I want to see more of a sample size from them before I label them as bust or they're going to be injury prone or anything like that, and especially before you make the huge investment of purchasing a jersey. I mean, for me, I'm not joking. That is a big investment for me. I put a lot of time and thought into my jersey selection. There's a reason why I'm serious, man. I only own one player, and that's Ben Roethlisberger. And I was like, this guy's never leaving Pittsburgh. I've got like 7 Roethlisberger jerseys between throwbacks and authentics and replicas. Everyone teaches their own. It's a tough process, man. It's a tough process. I mean, Shazier looks like a good one, but if he gets injury prone, will he last after that rookie contract? That's a tough question.
Yeah, I still don't have an offensive jersey yet. I'm probably going to get a Ben Roethlisberger this year, but I've been like such a defensive guy over the years that it's just been hard waiting on these young guys to come up. I mean, I'm waiting, and I really like the idea that McCullers and McClendon will see some time, especially in like short yardage. But man, I want a new jersey, and I don't want to waste my money.
Well, let me go on saying that I would almost bet my house that Le'Veon Bell is not going to be playing football in another jersey barring major injury. So if you want to get an offensive player and you're not worried about, okay, is this guy going to leave after his rookie deal? No. Le'Veon Bell will still be with the Steelers. If they let him go, I think they might burn down the practice facility, the Steelers headquarters. So Le'Veon Bell, number 26, that might be your guy. That might be your guy. If you don't want to go with Roethlisberger, if that's too generic, if that's too bland, everyone's got a Big Ben jersey. Le'Veon Bell, I'm telling you, 26. I'm drinking that Kool-Aid. I've been doing that since 2014. Ask Lance.
He's drunk with it. And my suggestion for it, he's drunk off of Kool-Aid. My suggestion for a jersey for an offensive player, because it's funny, Mohawk, you do the same thing as me. I typically just get defensive guys. I will get an offensive guy that I think plays like a defensive guy, as in the bus, because he ran over people. But get a Hines Ward. Hines Ward was basically a DB as a wide receiver, considering all the licks he put on. He put on people, crack back and, breaking kneecaps and killing Ed Reed numerous times. Just get a Hines Ward. And guess what? He'll never disappoint.
Right.
He'll never disappoint.
Right. All right, guys. Thanks, man.
True. Hey, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it, Mohawk. Hey, jerseys are tough, man. I still have a Kendrell Bell number 97 jersey sitting in my closet. It hasn't seen the light of day, well, probably since 2003 before he left the team for Kansas City. And it broke my heart. That guy was a defensive rookie of the year and looked like the next great 97. He was a stud. Do you remember Kendrell Bell, Lance? I know you do. I know you remember that
guy.
Everyone would have bet their house that he was going to be the next great inside linebacker for the Steelers. Done. Didn't even get out of his rookie deal, and my jersey is just still sitting in the closet. After that, I was like, you know what? Big Ben came into town, and when he started playing, I'm like, I'm going to get myself one of those jerseys. And I got the first one. It was a white Roethlisberger replica Reebok, and that was just the first of many because I said, you know, why change what's already good, you know? And I still wore the jersey through the motorcycle accidents, and I got ridiculed for wearing it after the allegations down in Georgia and in Lake Tahoe. Still wearing them, all right? Still wearing them. But let's move on from the jersey conversation a little bit, and let's start talking about what's coming up. And that is the St. Louis Rams in Week 3. They're going to the Dome to play the Rams, and I think that's a little interesting caveat there. The Steelers on the road are typically not as good, especially offensively, on the road as they are at home at Heinz Field. What stands out in this matchup? We're going to go through our keys. We're going to talk about the three keys on offense and defense as we always do, or however many we have for that particular week. But what stands out to you? What might scare you a little bit? Because the Vegas odds, if you're looking at Vegas to kind of set what they think the score is going to be, it's a very tight window here. Vegas has most books are 1.5 favoring the Steelers. Some are going to 2, some are only 1. What are your thoughts, Lance?
In looking at them, in looking at the two games, from an offensive perspective, they don't really look particularly scary. I mean, you have Kenny Britt that has the ability to stretch the football field. Jared Cook is a very solid tight end. He can attack the Steelers in some areas that I think they're vulnerable in, particularly in covering the tight end. But when you look at them offensively, particularly in the running game, I mean, Cunningham, Trey Mason, I mean, the running game is okay. They're not really good up front on the offensive line. Nick Foles is just okay. The offense, when you look at it, is sort of just like it doesn't appear to be an offense that has a lot of weapons that scare you. It looks like an offense that they can contain, I think. So, you know, I think when you look at some of the projections in the line, I think a lot of that rests on how well they play up front from a defensive perspective, and that defense may be able to get after the Steelers and really hold the score down. But offensively, there's nothing that really jumps off when you look at them on film.
Yeah, they have Tavon Austin, the former Western Union Mountaineer, who's a very explosive player, but he's not a guy that's going to get those Antonio Brown-type touches. He's a return guy. Like I said, anytime he has the ball in his hands, he's dangerous, but they don't really utilize him. Rumors are that Todd Gurley, the rookie running back out of Georgia, he's coming off that knee injury, who was not listed on the injury report. Rumors are swirling that he could possibly be available to play this Sunday. Is that something that kind of, that rookie that might not, you know, grasp the magnitude of the NFL, is a rookie running back jumping in there, does that bother you at all, or do you think that's just like, yeah, who cares?
It's probably like, yeah, who cares? I mean, nobody knows if he could play. He hasn't played football in quite some time. You know, if anything, I think a guy like that is probably more susceptible to putting the ball on the ground. He hasn't really been in live contact. You know, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm Tomlin, I'm Butler, I'm talking to those guys. They want Gurley in, and I would be trying to strip the ball out at all times. I'd be really trying to be really physical with him and really try to test his ball security. So I think bringing a rookie in might be somewhat advantageous to the Steelers. Plus, they can attack him mentally and just to see how well he knows protections. And because he's making his first start, maybe that limits them. Maybe they're more predictable. When Gurley's in, it's a lot of run looks because they may not be confident with his pass protection making his first start. So, yeah, I mean, you could look at it a lot of different ways. I don't think the Steelers are pumping Kool-Aid. There's Kool-Aid in their veins. They're all of a sudden scared because Todd Gurley is playing. I think he's just another guy at this point until he plays.
Yeah, that's a great point about pass protection, and that's something that a lot of people forget about when we're talking about running backs. And fortunately, the Steelers have one of the better running backs in Le'Veon Bell in pass protection. But let me go ahead and go first. I normally let you go first with the defense. Let's be honest. This matchup, what is intriguing about this matchup is not so much the Steelers' defense versus the Rams' offense. Not to take anything away from Nick Foles or anyone over there on that side of the football, but there is a reason why Mike Tomlin, if you were to just kind of have your eyes closed listening to his press conference on Tuesday, and any time he said the word Rams was just kind of muted and you didn't know who he was talking about, you might have thought that he was talking about the 1985 Bears defense and, you know, the steel curtain of the 70s. He's pumping the tires a little bit of this unit, but they are very good, especially their front seven. Very, very solid. Aaron Donald, everyone's heard about the guy, played for Pitt. That's someone the Steelers know very well from their proximity in turn. Let me give you some of the keys for the Steelers' offense going against this tough unit. If there's a weakness, which is very similar to the 49ers in this defense, in my opinion, it's in the secondary. And I think the Steelers will be very smart to utilize the quick-hitting passes that have made Ben Roethlisberger kept him healthy, kept the pass rush off of him, and ultimately have opened up some running lanes. Think back to the 49ers game last Sunday. Their running game was going nowhere. It was basically like running into a wall, and D'Angelo Williams, I think his longest run in the first quarter might have been 2 or 3 yards. And it wasn't until they started throwing the ball, spreading out the defense, and that opened up lanes for the running game. They need to do the same thing against the Rams, and I don't think that they abandoned the running game, especially with Le'Veon Bell back there. And Mike Tomlin was very, very, very adamant that Le'Veon Bell is going to be the workhorse. They're not going to work him in easily. He is their guy from the moment that ball is kicked off to the moment that the final whistle blows. So, number one, use the pass to set up some of the run. Number two, it's simple. Take advantage of the opportunities that are given. The Steelers have done this. They did it, I should say, in week two against the 49ers. They did a great job. In terms of you had those deep pass plays, Darius Hayward Bay brings it down. Think back to week one where Marcus Wheaton has a diving chance, hits his hands, drops it. Got to take advantage of those opportunities. And number three, it's all about the red zone. The Steelers score in the red zone could be game over, period. Because I don't think there's anybody, if the Steelers are clicking in the red zone, that can hang with them. Now, I know you have some thoughts on this, Lance. Go ahead.
What do you think the watermark is, Jeff, on in terms of sacks? So if I told you – you know, if I said the Steelers gave up said number of sacks, they win the game, or said number of sacks, they lose the game?
I'd probably say we'll say four. Four is would be the watermark. What about you?
So they win it, giving up four. They give up five, they lose.
Yes, I'm leaning. I mean, this team is based on that timing, the timing passes and stuff.
I think that's about right. I think that's about right if you look at the sack total, because barring a drive where you give up multiple sacks in one drive, when you give up sacks and drives, they're basically drive killers. It's very hard to score touchdowns on drives where you give up touchdowns. Only that's by getting big. So if they gave up five sacks, you know, I think that eliminates quite a few opportunities to score touchdowns, which I think would play into the hands of that's built to score a bunch of points. I just don't think they have the weapons. But you know, Aaron Donald. If you get a chance, if any of you guys have the NFL Game Pass, and I hate to shield products for the NFL because, you know, they got enough money. They don't need me promoting any apps that they have. But if you get to watch the All 22 of Aaron Donald, Aaron Donald is a grown-ass man. That's about the only way I could describe him. He is phenomenal. He reminds me of Geno Atkins a couple of years ago before Geno had the knee surgery, but better. I mean, this guy, look, Ramon Wallace and DeCastro, they better eat a lot of Wheaties, a lot of oatmeal, a lot of protein, because they're in for an all-day sucker. And I think, like what you said, if they can handle that defensive line, keep it under four sacks, maybe two or three quarterback hits, they have an outstanding opportunity to win the game.
Well, let's talk about Aaron Donald for a second. And if you know, I was thinking about this before the show. If you're going to compare his prowess, his stigma about him to anyone in the NFL, who are you going to compare him to? And I'm thinking of one guy who plays for the Houston Texans. That's J.J. Watt. And last year in 2014, J.J. Watt and the Texans came to Pittsburgh on Monday Night Football. And although the game didn't start well, eventually, you know, you realize that it's really just one guy. Now, one guy can disrupt a lot of stuff, but eventually, and you saw this with the Steelers' game plan in the second half, they learned how to play around him. In the second half, J.J. Watt was not a factor. He was always late to get to the ball, meaning Roethlisberger was getting the ball out of his hands quickly. They were keying to where he was lined up. I don't think that Aaron Donald is as versatile as J.J. Watt in terms of the positions that he plays and the techniques along the defensive line. He pretty much is standard for his specific spot within the defense. However, he is just as disruptive as J.J. Watt, in my opinion. Therefore, the Steelers need to use their weapons. I mean, we just spent the first half of the show talking about how great and how versatile the Steelers' offense is. You want it to be that good. You want to beat Aaron Donald. Well, you've got to use him. You've got to utilize everything. If they're going to come 10 years back, I know you and I talked about this off the air. Two things: hard counts to get him to jump off sides, and number two, work the screen game and Le'Veon Bell as a receiver out of the backfield like it's nobody's business. Because once they hit a couple of those, it's going to slow down the pass rush and it's going to open everything else up. I mean, do you see what I'm saying in terms of the fact that Aaron Donald's great? I'm not taking anything away from that young man because he is still very young. But are you with me at the same time where it's like, he is just one guy, and they did just lose to the Washington Redskins, mind you. And I live in Maryland. I have to watch that team more often than I'd like to. They're not good. Period. They're not good. And they beat the Seattle. They beat the Seattle Seahawks in Week One. Well, Seattle doesn't look like they're what they used to be, or they were last year at this point in the season. Anyway, so a lot of people are scared of this matchup. Me, I'm not as scared. Offensively, I think the Steelers, it doesn't matter who you put them up against, the Seattle Seahawks, they'll see them later on in the year. Pittsburgh's going to move the ball on anybody. It comes down to, can they take advantage of opportunities? And that is the key plays, those red zone plays. Like you said, those sacks can be the difference between a touchdown and a field goal. And the way Josh Scobie's kicking, well, Lord knows what's going to happen. But what do you think? Do you think that I'm a little bit too lackadaisical in terms of my mindset and my approach to this game? Or do you think that I'm on to something?
I think you're a little lackadaisical. I think along with Seattle, this is going to be the best defensive front they face because it's not as if Aaron is coming alone. He is bringing Chris Long and Robert Quinn, two hell of a players. And Robert Quinn, as a 4-3 defensive end, might just be the best 4-3 defensive end in football. So they may have the best 4-3 defensive end. And he's not better than J.J. Watt, but J.J. Watt's a 3-4 guy. But J.J. Watt's the best defensive lineman, best defensive player in football. But when you put Quinn on a line with Donald and Chris Long, I mean, that's going to keep them up at night. And can they handle it? I think so. You just can't let any one of those guys wreck your entire game plan. And they are versatile enough, especially with the addition of Le'Veon Bell, to be able to handle anybody. But what makes St. Louis even more tough is that St. Louis is at home, on carpet, with that crowd noise. So it's going to be key that they stay out of those third and sevens and third and eights, those predictable passing situations where they can pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. So they're going to have to stay on schedule, run the football. But this is about as good of a defensive line as they're going to face and that there is in the National Football League. Make no bones about it.
Like I said, they have a good defense. Would you agree that their weakness is their secondary?
Absolutely. I mean, they butter their bread on their front four. I mean, they want to get after you. They're aggressive. They're going to get upfield. They're going to try to be very disruptive. You know, if they're not getting home and that defensive line isn't winning, they're not winning.
Well, you know, a stat that former editor of Behind the Steel Curtain now works for DK on PittsburghSports.com, Neil Coulomb, he looked up. There's no one in the NFL since, I think, 2013. There's no team better than the Steelers in terms of short passes that turn into big plays because of the playmakers they have at wide receiver. So look for Antonio Brown to get a lot of those quick screens and those quick slants. And, hey, if they're going to pin their ears back and send the house, I'll take my odds with Antonio Brown with the ball in his hands with space. And I think you'd agree with me there. But let's go to the other side of the football. You're talking about the defense, the Steelers' defense going against Nick Foles and that offense. What are some of the keys that you have for that matchup?
One thing I'd like to add to the offensive breakdown is one thing you saw in the Washington game is that Washington really attacked Robert Quinn in the run game and really attacked him on the edges. So I would love to be able to run the football really well with the counter stuff and really get after those defensive ends. That would be really good. Wear those guys down, possess the football, so when you get in the second half, those guys are gassed and they're absolutely taking the legs out of the pass rush. But in terms of St. Louis's offense, I'll just give you guys a couple of stats here. When I talk about the offense, I'm being blah, I have a blah offense. Nothing really stands out, no offensive weapons, nobody really, you know, that you fear. Overall, football focus, they're ranked 24th. They average 22 points a game, 19th overall. And according to Football Outsiders, they rank 22nd. So when you look at them, there isn't anything particularly dynamic that stands out. I mean, I think the key in this game will be getting pressure to Nick Foles by only bringing four consistently. Make Nick Foles scan four and have an extra guy in coverage. You don't want to put him in the five look. Really want him to play up front in terms of pressure. All of their guys in terms of pass blocking have negative ratings according to PFF, except for Brown. They give a lot of pressure. And it's not necessarily a dam where there's multiple leaks everywhere. They're just an average line. You know, there's no dominant player on that line. So I could see a situation where both Tuitt and Hayward have good games and can really get after those guys in terms of getting pressure on a quarterback. In terms of the run game, you know, you look at Trey Mason, averaging 3.7 yards a carry. Ben Cunningham, 2.6 yards per carry. Tavon Austin, their most explosive player, averaging 7.1 yards per carry. But he's not really a running back. He's not a guy that they're going to try to really get to all the time. So you can see why they drafted early and why they want to go to the back. I mean, as a team, they're only averaging 3.7 yards per carry, 23rd in the NFL. Again, so, you know, when you look at the offense, you look at the running game, you see what they want to do. They want to run the football. It sounds about sort of like Tennessee, but I don't know if they're built and equipped to do that. They just don't run it well. Some other rankings for the running game, 17th according to PFF. And Outsiders, they rank 23rd. I mean, the one thing that stands out when you look at them is Jared Steelers, in terms of how the Steelers get tight ends. Right now, completion percentage is 63.2%. They've given up four TDs. We all remember how well Gronkowski played against them. And when you look at Jared Cook, he's their number one in targets, in catches, in yards per catch, and over 20 yards. So that's what I going to have to focus on. So if you look at this game from an offensive perspective, try to eliminate the coverage busts and the shot plays. You have to clamp down on Cook. Eliminate the running game. Put the game in Nick Foles' hands. And I think the Steelers can have a lot of success. I just think that this is an offense that they should be able to handle.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it, especially coming off the game that they just played. It's definitely tough. I think at this early stage in the season, this is for offense and defense for the Steelers, it comes down to the fact that they have had so little snaps under their belt that you still really don't know what to expect. And so you could get the Steelers of, you know, after the first quarter against the 49ers where they dominated the line of scrimmage, or you could get the Steelers of the first week where they got no pressure really and essentially just allowed the opposing team to just pass at will all over them. Nonetheless, let's get to predictions, shall we? And this is the time where if you want to go with the spread, that's up to you. You can mention the spread if you want. What is your prediction for the upcoming game this Sunday? Lance, go ahead.
So there's a reason, listeners, why Jeff said, I'm not the homer. I'm just going to upset. I think the Saints beat the Steelers 24-21. I think that the Rams' offensive line really gets after the Steelers, and they really put a limit. They really do a good job of limiting the Steelers' offense. I think the Steelers' tackles are going to have a hard job dealing with both Long and Robert Quinn. And I think Aaron Donald is going to really have a good game. I think they're really going to struggle with how they deal with the Rams up front. So I'm picking the Rams 24-21. The road crowd noise, that pressure that they can apply on you because of that and that fast track, I think all of that makes it a 24-21 game for the Rams.
All right. And it's fine. I respect your prediction. Understand, though, that the Steelers rarely lose when Le'Veon Bell is in the lineup. When he's not in the lineup, well, they typically don't do well. Last week was an aberration without Le'Veon Bell in the lineup, but he's back, and he's going to make all the difference in this game, and he's going to be the player that's going to have big numbers. I'm expecting him to have well over 150 total yards from scrimmage, maybe 200 in terms of receiving and rushing. I think he's that good. I think the Steelers' offense is going to be working towards him in terms of getting him the football early and often, and I think it's going to be up to him to not only do well in pass protection but also receiving, which is something that is going to equate to huge matchup problems for any defense, especially the Rams. I think that the Steelers win this game. I do think it's going to be close. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say 29, Steelers 29, St. Louis Rams 25. 29-25. We've got some weird numbers now, Lance, with these two-point conversions and all this different stuff, missed extra points. You got some weird numbers. I'm going to go with the weird numbers. I'm going to say Steelers 29, Rams 25. They're not going to get their watermark set, their goal set for 30 points a game. They're going to come really close, but I think it's going to be a four-point victory for the Steelers. I don't know what it is. I think the Steelers, they found something in that game against the 49ers. I think they're going to build on it in this week against the Rams. I think, hey, they have nowhere to go but up. Now, we're running out of time, and I want to get your opinion on a couple things here, Lance, before I let you go. Today, the Pittsburgh Steelers announced that Tyler Murphy, the wide receiver, was released to make room for the, Le'Veon Bell to go back on the roster, obviously, with the suspension over. And a lot of people were upset. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to go on the practice squad. He'll spend a year there. He has a good chance of making the roster next year. With a guy like Darius Heyward-Bey maybe not being in the lineup, here's my couple questions for you. They're going to run into the same situation when Martavis Bryant comes back off his suspension in a couple weeks. Who do you think will be gone that time around from the roster at this time? Do you think it's going to be – a lot of people are talking they want Dre Archer to be released, or they want Dre Archer to be traded because now with Jordan Todman, he can do a lot of the same things. Some things he can do better than Dre Archer. Who do you think? You think they go with a running back, fullback, maybe Roosevelt next? You think they go defensive line, with L.T. Walton? What are you thinking?
When I look at players, it's always the P's. Pay, productivity, production, and pedigree. Tottenham has none of the P's. The one P that Dre Archer has is pedigree, meaning he was drafted in the third round. That protects him. If he gets waived and they keep a guy like Tottenham, that's a public admission that the draft pick was terrible. So Dre Archer stays, although I think the pick was absolutely terrible.
Okay. All right, now here's another question for you. It's my last one, then we're going to bring Chris Carter on to let him spout off about what everyone wants to talk about at the end of the show. Cortez Allen didn't play last week's game. The secondary looked a little bit better. I think you would say that they looked a little bit better. There were some passes that were actually knocked down. They were actually combated. Antoine Blake, he was laying the lumber big time. Vernon Davis, I mean, that guy was like doubles him in size. He was laying him out on a couple plays. Cortez Allen was not on the injury report, was a full participant today. What do the Steelers do with their secondary, and what do they do with Cortez Allen moving forward if he's healthy and ready to go?
Hey, man, play him. It's not like any of these guys are great. So, you know, they're going to have their ups and downs. Boykin's going to get lit up sometimes. Hey, I mean, look, Blake's going to get lit up sometimes. Throw them all in the mix until a couple of guys establish themselves as guys that should be out there all the time. It's still early. Let them develop a rotation. Throw Cortez in the mix of it. They paid the guy. Let's see if the guy can play. He'll be on short rope anyway.
All right, so two follow-ups to that. Who, if Allen is in, someone's going to be inactive. Do you think it's Ross Cockrell or do you think it's Brandon Boykin, the kid that loses their helmet on game day?
It's Cockrell.
Okay.
Cockrell has no P's.
You're right. He has no P's. however, bringing up Boykin, though, are you a conspiracy theorist? Like a lot of the people on Twitter and on social media that think that the Steelers are holding him out of the games on purpose because they realize that if he plays more than 60% of the snaps, they then have to give a higher draft pick, I think a fourth-round pick, to the Philadelphia Eagles rather than a fifth. Do you believe in that theory, or do you think that's nothing but BS?
You know how stupid that sounds. That is just the stupidest
I'm just saying
thing
what people
I've
are saying.
Hey, people who believe that, that's stupid. Stop being stupid. Guys want to win
football games.
Nobody's keeping track of the snaps. Guys want to play football, want to win football games. You try to tell me if Boykin could have played, picked Brady off three times, they got the win, they wouldn't have done that because of some 60% snap count. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
All right. And then let's bring Chris Carter. And Chris, are you there?
I'm here, Jeff. What's going on?
Not much. Get off the hamster wheel. What do you got to say before we finish up there? What is it, baby buzz? Isn't that what you call him, Lance?
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, I think that when you guys are going over your predictions, Lance, you keep picking against my boys. And they're our boys. Keep doing it. It just hurts. Oh, man. But I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this much. The Steelers are going up against a difficult defensive front, and we have a really good breakdown for anyone. If you're listening to this live, or if you're listening to this tomorrow on the iTunes podcast, check in the morning, Thursday morning. We should have a defensive breakdown of the Rams either tomorrow morning or Friday morning coming out that will show you what they do. The Rams are very raw in some points. They have a lot of young talent. Brockers and Donald are really mean defensive tackles. And they are very good both exploding into the line and also using moves to get past you once you recover from their explosion. And it will really be a challenge, especially for one Cody Wallace. He's gonna have to not be a liability. And that is something that, you know, I think this week he got away with because, you know, he made some plays, but he also, you saw him almost not make a play, and you saw the Patriots game, he would be in the right position, but not athletic enough to finish off certain plays. In this game, he's going to be challenged. Those two guys are going to be shooting in the A-gap, and he's going to have to take on both of them, and both of them are really high-caliber players. But what I think will play to the Steelers' advantage is, they're young, they're talented, but they're not fully sounded fundamental veterans. And we'll show one play in the breakdown where Aaron Donald makes a great athletic play, but his youth and his exuberance, I don't know what the word of that would be, but his inexperience, he makes a fundamental mistake that allows Matt Jones to run for a touchdown. And there's going to be quite a few of those plays. If I had to pick the game, I'm picking the Steelers to score about like 30 points and the Rams to score anywhere between 13 and 16 points. I think the Rams are going to be able to move the I think the Rams are going to be able to move the ball, but I don't think that they're going to be able to put it in the end zone as much as people think. The Steelers front looked really good last week, and not just in containing Kaepernick or stopping Carlos Hyde, but in getting past offensive tackles, in shooting in gaps, in turning plays around. There were many very positive things, and that's why I wrote that Colbert article that Jeff was talking about earlier in the show. The front seven was doing very fundamental things and being very athletic and winning battles at the line of scrimmage. Both sides were dominated, and this is coming from a 49ers team that just held Adrian Peterson to 31 yards the week before. So I think when you're looking at this, the Steelers have been really working to build up their front on both sides of the ball, and you saw that this week, and you even saw it in the first week with the Patriots. They couldn't dominate the ground, and they couldn't shut down D'Angelo Williams. And with Le'Veon Bell, I mean, you saw the Redskins beat up the Rams with Matt Jones and Alfred Morris. I mean, less Alfred Morris, but more Matt Jones. But with Le'Veon Bell, I think there's going to be some serious problems, and I think that's going to open up the passing game. Their corners are not great. They can make plays when pressure's on, and the Rams do have exotic blitzes, but a lot of their blitzes come from four-man rushes. I don't see their defense being as destructive. I think that they might force a turnover or two, they might get a strip. I don't see our offense being held under at least three scores. I even find them hard keeping us under 26 or 28 points. But yeah, I say like 30-13 or 30-16. It's going to be a Steelers route, and we'll by like mid fourth quarter, we're going to be sitting pretty.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. The homers pick the homer team, and the hater picks the hater team. So,
hater.
Well, at least I'm not a conspiracy theorist as well.
Hey, don't say that. I'm not in that group. I'm not in that group. But, CC, if you know it, and Lance, if you don't, you might not be in the right areas of Twitter. I mean, with running the Behind the Steel Curtain Twitter page, there are people that strongly believe that is exactly what's going on with Boykin.
There's a lot of people that believe a lot of things on Twitter. That's the danger.
Area 51.
Exactly.
Well, hey.
I'm a Muslim.
All right. Well, that's our show. Chris, thank you for working the phones. Lance, as always, thanks for your time. We'll see who's right this Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time kickoff, St. Louis Rams, Pittsburgh Steelers in the Dome. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye.